Shall we begin?
Let's begin now.
You're listening to the Dishin' and Swishin' podcast on HoopFeed.com.
Hi, everybody. It's David Siegel, and it's a pleasure to welcome you to a Final Four edition of Dishin' and Swishin' on HoopFeed.com. And, you know, this is the fourth consecutive year that I am really pleased to have with me one of the great coaches in America to break down the Final Four and talk a little bit about the season and, of course, his program as well. And that is DePaul's Doug Bruno. Coach, how are you today?
I'm great. Big picture, I'm great. Little picture, always last game.
Coach, you know, that last game was a tough one, but it was a great season for your team. It was a little bit up and down. It was kind of a crazy ride for you this year.
There's no doubt. We really had some great wins during the season, and we really played some great basketball. And when we were good, we were really good. And at some, you know, at moments, we were just, you know, we allowed ourselves to be average at moments, too. But still, you know, when you step back from it, the players, my seniors, Shanice Jenkins and Megan Petkoa, and junior Jessica January did a great job of leading this team, and we, you know, had another good year, and, you know, we got to a Sweet 16 as a lower seed and a home court, so I think that's a pretty tall achievement in and of itself. But Oregon State is really good, and, you know, they are really good, Baylor's really good, UConn's really good, and Washington and Syracuse have gotten to the Final Four, so they are there, and your record is what your record says it is, so they're very, very good. They beat some very good teams along the way to get there, Washington beating Maryland at Maryland, and Stanford and you know, Cuse and Q, you know, knocking off South Carolina and Tennessee. Those are big wins.
You know, I take a look, and I see Cuse in there, and I see UConn in there, and, you know, your team was so close and was so good, and, you know, it just still makes – I still miss the Big East, I got to tell you.
We all do. I mean, it was a great, great league. And, you know, one of the last years we were all together, we set nine teams to this tournament.
Wow, that's right. You know, and you know, the Pac-12 is talking about they got half, but, you know, I do seem to recall a Louisville-UConn final where, you know, we had them both. So.
No, there's no question that, I mean, nine out of 16 is even – That was a great feat, and that was, you know, it was just really a special league that we were in.
You know, we might as well start with Oregon State, since that's where you saw one of these teams. You know, and like you said, it was a tough matchup, tough team. They defeated your squad 83-71. They really seemed to take, you mentioned your seniors, Megan and Chinesa, they seemed to sort of take them out of their game with their defensive pressure. What did Oregon State do that got you guys a little bit off balance and a little bit off your game?
Well, first of all, Oregon State is a great basketball team, and they have a great coach in Scott Ruick. They've been together. He's put this together over a period of time, and they have the experience, the tough experience of having been defeated in the tournament a year ago. So this is a good, solid veteran team that won the Pac-12 regular season championship, and they won the tournament championship. So they're a veteran team. The specific question you asked is, how do they take you out? Well, first of all, they're a very big team. They're long at every position. They've got great size and strength and length at every position. So, you know, defensively, they do a great job of staying home, having every player have the ability to own their own matchup and guard you individually and not have to, you know, they put you in a position where you are not able to create help because they have a single helper at the rim in 6'6" or 6'7". I've seen her listed both sizes, Ruth Hamlin. So when Ruth Hamlin's hanging at the rim like she is, everybody else owns their matchup. There's nothing for you when you get to the rim, and there's no help because there's no open players because you've created openings. The only place we could really find consistent openings were in the position that Hamlin was guarding. So Jackie Grant was able to have 15 from the perimeter, and so was Marte Grays. I could never get the matchup where Hamlin was guarding Megan Petkoa, so Megan was always guarded by their second big kid, either 6'3", Devin Hunter. You know, Maria Gulich came off the bench at 6'5". they always had somebody nice and long and tall guarding Megan Pacoa. So that's a little bit about how they were able to. We had strong games out of Jackie Grant and Marte Graves, and a strong game out of Jessica January. We did not get strong games out of games that they're used to out of Janice Jenkins and Megan Pacoa. And that's really kind of the way the game fell out.
And when you get somebody hitting shots, you know, there's sometimes it's a little tough to figure out if it's possible to stop them. And, you know, your teams have stopped some of the better players that I've seen play, you know, especially, you know, with UConn and you playing so frequently. But Jamie Wisner put on a show. You know, 38 points, 7 of 10 from 3. She just was in one of those zones that, you know, you see Steph Curry get into.
And she was contested. I mean, you know, my players hear it from me when they don't get good, strong contest pressure on a jump shooter. And you know, there's some good, strong contests in the threes that she made early on. You know, we are not a big team. And so we were contesting with some smaller players. And at the same time, you know, Jamie, to her credit, knocked them down. I think she struggled in the first half of the Baylor game because Baylor did have a little bit more length on her. And, you know, she was married a little bit. I think she got a little bit married to her three-point game against Baylor in the first half. And then the second half, you saw with Jamie why she is the player of the year in the Pac-12 conference. She identified what was going on. She came out in the second half, got the ball into the paint, and got some good intermediate scoring done, some creating for her teammates. And, you know, that's what great players do. They make their teammates better. So I thought the win over Baylor, Jamie had a lot to do with it in the second half. But her three-point shooting was not quite as effective as it was against us because she was being guarded by longer players.
You know, one of the things that I've always talked about was the fact that these, you know, when you play some international play during the off months, it seems your game elevates that much faster and that much better when you get back into the season. And this team, you know, Wisner, Sidney Weiss, and Hamblin all played international ball over the summer. And I really think that it helped give them that additional confidence and play to an even higher level than they had previously.
No, there's no question about that. And, you know, and Wisner, you know, you got to forgive me for my pronunciations. I don't know if it's Wisner or Wisner. I don't know if it's Weiss or Weiss, but, you know, I'll follow your lead. So, but the white, is it Wisner or Wisner? I don't even know.
I think it's Weiss, but you know what? I don't think she'll mind if we're talking about her in the Final Four.
I said Wisner or Weiss.
Oh, what? Yeah, you know what? You know what? We don't know. We'll go with whatever you feel like.
I think it's Jamie Wisner. Well, she could have played Canadian or she could have played, you know, with the United States, and she chose the U.S. And the same, you know, the Weiss. We kid played with Janice Jenkins on the World University Games.
Right.
Hamblin, you know, was a part of the Pan Am winning team. So I mean, it was just they absolutely. USA Basketball is a great organization, and it's a great experience for anybody that can play it.
You know, and definitely, and as you mentioned, is Hamblin playing in Canada with, you know, winning a gold medal for that team and playing against, you know, some of the competition that she did, you know, it definitely had an impact there as well, as it did with Kia Nurse, of course, for UConn. And, you know, USA Basketball was scattered throughout this, and we'll talk a little bit about that shortly. But, you know, the other thing
we also got to make sure we say, Dave, that, you know, Canada won the Pan American gold. They won it against college kids.
Right.
So they didn't exactly – their A-team didn't play exactly against our A-team. So, you know, Ruth and Kia were getting great experience against great college players, but they weren't getting the same experience that you know, they weren't playing our A team. I just as a nationalist living in the United States of America, I just want to make sure that point is stated, because I mean I'm happy for the Canadian pride that they're able to have over that victory, but with some. I just think they need to temper it a little bit.
But they did beat.
They're not going to get that same team in Rio.
No, but they did beat Stewie and Mariah Jefferson. So that gives them a little bit of bragging rights. But, yes, of course, it's definitely not the senior national team that the United States puts out there. That will definitely be a different subject, different kettle of fish for them to face. You know, that's for sure. You know, but, you know, I would be remiss if you had mentioned, you know, Scott taking over that team and what he's done. You know, coming up from the D3 program and doing so well there and then coming up to this level, though, You know, this was a program that was in disarray not that long ago, and the way that he has built it that this quickly really kind of speaks volumes of the way that he goes about things and the way that he has been able to instruct his kids.
Well, I mean, they're a very well-schooled team. They're a very well-taught team, and Scott does a really good technical job with his X's and O's on both sides of the basketball. But, David, it still comes down to getting players. And, you know, that they were able to get in there and get this level of recruit. I mean, these are really, really talented players. And you know, I just really think that the job, yes, technically he's really good. Yes, teaching he's really good. But, you know, to be able to get in and get this many good players lined up this quickly. And I get it that Ruth Hamlin was, you know, somebody that was a project in their first and second year in the Pac-12. But still, you know, he was able to get some really, really good pieces around her as well. So I'm just amazed at the talent level that's there that quickly.
And, you know, so we'll jump around a little bit. I mean, of course, they're going to be playing UConn in the first game on Sunday. But, you know, we might as well stay out west in the Pac-12 for a few minutes and talk about Mike Nabors in Washington, because, you know, this is another great story. You know, Mike, you know, coming from the long background of being an assistant, being passed over at Xavier when Kevin McGough went to Washington, he goes to Washington with Kevin and becomes the head coach. You know, this is another team that, you know, really, they seem to really have his personality. And, you know, you could almost see them making lists as they go, trying to get through the game. And, you know, they're just a very, very fun group of team to root for.
Yeah, and let's not forget they finished fifth in the Pac-12. I mean, that's the strength of the Pac-12 this season. You know, they were RPI ranked the number one league in the country. They sent five teams to the NCAA tournament. I think there was a pretty clear delineation there. I mean, Oregon is really, they're in the semis of the NIT, and Oregon just beat El Paso at El Paso the other day in a game that drew over 9,000 people. So that had to be a great event for the NIT, and Oregon would have been the sixth team in had they gone. So the Pac-12 is really, really strong this year. And, you know, so Mike coming in here as the fifth-ranked team or fifth-place team in the Pac-12 is a statement to how good the league really, really was. And, you know, Kelsey Plum is a great, great player. She's just a really, really gifted and talented player for them to build it around. And again, you're going to have to help me with the name. Is it Osahar? Am I saying it right, David?
Close enough. Osahar.
Osahar. And, you know, everybody, okay, the kid shoots a flat-footed shot. You know, it doesn't matter if it's flat-footed or if you jump in the air a foot and a half. The ball has got to find the net. The ball doesn't have to find the rim. We talk about, you know, I talk about to my players all the time, we're looking for textile workers here. We're not looking for steel workers. So, you know, I want my players to be shooting balls that hit the bottom of the net, not that hit the steel. And, you know, that's what Osahar really does. I mean, she can take you out there, but she also has a presence to the rebound. She's got what I call visual athleticism. She's got very, very quick eyes. So people's eyes immediately go to the size of her body, and yet her vision is very quick. And her vision is ultra quick, actually, which is why she's so quick to the boards and why, you know, she creates a very solid presence in the middle of Mike Nabors 2-3 zone.
You know, the thing that's amazing.
Matchup zone, whatever kind of zone, the neighbor zone.
You know, her hands and her ability to pass the ball, too. What blew me away when I looked up the stats and doing some preparation here, she has 30 assists less than Plum this year.
I mean, and David, you call it hands. I that's why I call them. You know, you don't do anything with your body that isn't led by your eyes. And great passers have great vision. And, you know, she has tremendous, tremendous passing ability because she's got great vision. And this is really a, you know, everybody wants to define athleticism as running and jumping. So they're going to say that she's not a very athletic player. But when your eyes are as quick as her eyes are, if you stuck a baseball bat in her hands, put her in a left-handed batter's box, guess what? Babe Ruth was athletic.
That's very, very true. Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate that she has such knee problems and that it's going to be very difficult for her to pursue any type of longevity in basketball. But yes, people notice her size and all, but this girl plays 32 minutes a game. You know, she's hitting those three-pointers. She is, like you said, a dominant force, averaged over 11 rebounds a game this year so far. You know, she's definitely been a difference maker. And what she does is she opens things up, because Talia Walton is certainly improved her WNBA draft stock with the way that she's played in this tournament. And, you know, people are now discovering how good Kelsey Plum is. You know, that she really is just a tremendous all-around player. And, you know, she's just another – the team reminds me a lot of Minnesota from 2004 with McCarville at center and Whalen at the guard position. And you know, they also entered the tournament as a lower seed out of the Big Ten, and look what they did.
That's a great comparison. And because I've been blessed to be able to coach Lindsay Whalen with the USA national team, I guess – you know, I'm going to have to see into the future to be able to give, you know, Kelsey the same amount of credit that Lindsay has earned over her career, but that's not fair to Kelsey. Kelsey Plum, where she is right now at Washington, has had a great, great year, and they wouldn't be here without her. And back to this visual athleticism aspect again, she's another very quick-eyed player. She sees the floor, and she does so much more than just score the basketball. She creates for other people, and you know, that's why this is a good team. It's a really good team. And like you said, you got the Walton play. You know, Walton's also a potential draft pick. So that's three really, really good players to build this around.
All right, so let's talk for a second just about the Pac-12. And I got to ask you, because you have long been one of those people, I mean, that has been an advocate for playing mid-major teams, playing difficult schedules, all of the types of things that help even up the playing field when it comes to who is who and where are they ranked and RPI and that fun stuff. Now, a lot of people said that the Pac-12 gamed the RPI system when they scheduled some teams that were fairly highly ranked but not at the very elite level so that they could win those games. But then they went out now and they've proven that, you know, with their performance in the tournament, that at least the top half of the conference is really, really good. So did they game the system a little bit to try and get those teams in there, in your opinion? Or, you know, did they earn all the accolades that were presented to them in the postseason?
No, I think they've earned it. I definitely think they still have to play against each other also. And, you know, there's this, you know, area where we're not even in the conversation is an Arizona State team that really, really, really had a very, very good year. And top to bottom had a really, really good year. And, you know, you saw what Stanford did in the tournament. You know, when we got to the Sweet 16, there were four teams from the Pac-12 and four teams from the Southeastern Conference. But it was 4 out of 9 from the Southeastern Conference and 4 out of 5 from the Pac-12. So, I mean, I think that in and of itself makes a statement. I am Mike Neighbors is the guy that really believes in analyzing the RPI, and you know, you're very right about finding teams that you can beat that ultimately are going to be in a good play. You want the W, and you want a high RPI W, so you really have to find that team that's beatable. But you know, I still think there's a major flaw in the RPI, and I say it all the time. I'm not an actuary. One of my players graduating is an actuary science major, Megan Podkowa. I can count a 3, a 2, and a 1. That's my extent of accounting or being an actuary scientist. But I do know this. If there's 300 Division I teams, and on day one, everybody's at the same spot, and 150 teams win and 150 teams lose, well, guess what? At day, you know, there has to be a preconceived. What's flawed about the RPI is there has to be a preconceived starting point that doesn't have everybody at zero. Otherwise, how does the computer know when there's 150 0-1 teams and 150 1-0 teams what the strength of schedule is? I mean, so, okay, now it's day two, and you got 75-75s, you got 75, you know, 2-0s, you got 75 0-2s, and you got 150 1-1s. I mean, how does the computer know at that point who is better than whom? without a preconceived starting point. So, you know, again, I'm just happy for the Pac-12 because they played really, really good basketball. There is some truth to the fact that nobody out east can stay up to watch them. You know, that they do lose the opportunity of the eye test because it's hard to stay up out east and even in the Midwest to stay up and watch them at night. So they do lose the opportunity to be eye tested. But don't forget, you know, UCLA had a good year. Stanford showed what they did with their win over Notre Dame. Arizona State had a great year. And Oregon State, you got two of the 50% of the Final Four field. And don't forget, you know, Washington did have to go to Maryland and beat Maryland on their home court. That is, look, I'm all in favor of us going back to home courts in the top 16, the top four seeds in each region. I wish we didn't have to, but it's better for the game because it creates better attendance. But it's still not easy to be a 7 winning at a 2. You know, it's next to impossible to be an 8-9 beating a 1. It's really hard to be a 7 beating a 2. When it happened twice, Tennessee beat Arizona State and Washington beat Maryland. And it's just not easy to do, to win on a home court. So Washington has proved it by what they did. And then they had to turn around and beat Stanford. And Tyra doesn't lose to the same coach or program twice. You know, it's not what Tyra's programs do. And Washington beat them pretty handily in the Pac-12 tournament. So I was not expecting them to handle Stanford quite like they did in the Elite Eight game.
You know, and let's not forget that they also went and beat Kentucky in Lexington.
Yeah.
So, both two and three they went to and won there.
Right. And you know, Rupp Arena is exactly where Matthew Mitchell and his Kentucky Wildcats play all their home games, but still they do get into Rupp Arena once or twice a year.
Exactly. And they did have that fan base that was there.
Right.
So let's double back then, and now let's talk about Oregon State's matchup, and let's talk about UConn. You've played them. You've coached with Geno. You know all everything there is to know about that program, pretty much. You know, what I have been, you know, without getting into the whole is it bad for basketball argument, what I have always said when I looked at what's going on this year is, I don't know when you're going to see a trio of players that are so good together playing on one team again in who knows when.
Well, I mean, they're just a special, special group. I mean, it's a really, I've said from the beginning of the year, David, I think you've probably heard me say it, that UConn is in a league place in women's basketball. They are better than everybody else in the country by a lot, by a long shot. Now, Vic Schaefer is a great defensive coach, and you know he's a great defensive coach. So you know it's not, you know, everybody wants to make fun of that score. You know, that score is a great basketball team playing great basketball together. And Stewie is one of the best players ever to have played the game. Morgan Tuck should have been an All-American. I mean, should have been on everybody's All-American team a year ago, but people just couldn't see themselves putting four UConn players on those teams. And Mariah Jefferson is, I mean, you're talking 1-2-3 in the draft here, 1-2-4 in the draft here. So, I mean, these are special, special basketball players. And, you know, Kia Nurse is still really, really good. Katie Lou Samuelson is really, really a special player. And you know, you still got Nafisa Kaya, Gabby Williams, you know, and Samaya Chong. This is a really, really, really well put together UConn basketball team. And all of that said, you know, UConn has not had to play this year somebody like Oregon State. You know, they've played a lot of really good teams, and they've, believe me, Their non-conference schedule was off the charts in the American Athletic Conference. They had to play against, you know, I think three really strong teams in South Florida Temple and who am I, for Tulane. I mean, there's, you know, three other solid teams, but his non-conference schedule, Geno's non-conference schedule was absolutely off the charts. And, you know, Oregon State, though, is just different because they're so big and they're big and they're skilled at the guard position and they can make threes. So it's going to be, I still think UConn is going to win this game, and I think they're going to win it going away. But there's easy 20-point wins to 30-point wins, and then there's hard-fought 20-point wins. I think it's going to be a hard-fought 20-point win for UConn. And you know, I say that with all respect for Oregon State, because Oregon State is really, really special. But that's just how good UConn is. And yeah, UConn's still going to have to score against a really, really good defensive team. And Oregon State has a 6'7 player in the middle. I mean, she's every bit as big or bigger than Stephanie Dolson was. She's not near the passer that Stephanie Dolson was. So I'm not hearing, Coach Bruno's not saying that she's as good as Stephanie Dolson, but she's got a paint presence, a basket rim presence that's every bit, you know, it's just very, very important. So UConn's still going to have to be efficient offensively.
You know, you've had the pleasure of coaching Breonna Stewart now, some with the USA team. When you see her in practice like that, are there things that you see that, you know, I sit here, you know, as a fan and watch the game, and there are times when, you know, I just do a double take and say, wow. You know, when you coach her, are there other little intricacies to her game that we don't see, that people like you that have done this for so long see, that makes her that little bit different?
Well, there's definitely the wow things. I mean, you know, some of the wow aspects. You know, it's just the flexibility of her body to be able to collect. The flexibility of her body together with her wingspan, the length of her wingspan to just arch your back and find a rebound that's basically 6 feet behind her head and suck it in like a vacuum cleaner. I mean, you know, those are the wild things that you're talking about, David. You know, the little things, I just think she's just a real good, solid, you know, she just takes it all in and, you know, she just lets it ferment, all the little nuances of the game, and just then goes out and applies it. The question is, I really don't know that I can answer you with a lot of little nuances that I can say to her. I mean, she's just, you know, she's just a special, special competitor. First of all, she's an ultra competitive human being. She's unselfish. You know, she's got the ability to score the ball. She's got the ability to see it. Back to the visual athleticism I was talking about. She's obviously got visual athleticism, but she's got the ability to run and jump also. So when her eyes leave her body, it's leading a very special, you know, it's leading great leaps. It's leading, you know, the ability, the long strides. It's leading huge hands that shoot the ball so well. So, I mean, she's got great visual athleticism, but she's also got this, you know, just a special, special player. And, you know, her maturity with USA Basketball, is just been fun to watch, because she's gone from she's experienced USA Basketball at all levels, but she's also just gotten, when she was with the national team her first time around, she was a little bit tentative. She came back a year later and she was a lot less tentative, and then she came back again last February and she was even, you know, less tentative yet and more just fitting in with the great players on this planet that are part of the USA national team. So she's just really, really one of the all-time greats, and it's just a joy to watch her every day.
You mentioned there are easy and tough 20-point wins, and Texas was definitely one that was a little bit more difficult than the ones that we had seen before that. Oregon State has a lot of those same types of qualities, and the fact that they can hit the three-pointer probably better than Texas, and they have the big girl just like Texas did. This should be a game that Oregon State, if they're hitting their shots, they should actually be with. It should be a reasonably close game for a good portion of that of the game, at least, I would say. Would you agree with that assessment?
Well, David, you make a great point, but one thing that you said was if they're hitting their shots, and there's a reason people don't hit shots against UConn. UConn is one of the best defensive teams in the country. And so when people don't hit shots against UConn, you know, you can just say you're off or you're missing, or, you know, that you know, like they're talking on the men's side about percentages going down in domes or big arenas. But you know what? Against UConn, there's a reason you don't hit your shots, and that's UConn. So, you know, that's the if they're hitting their shots, they have to, against UConn first, you have to get your shots. And then after you get your shots, I tell my teams all the time, my job is to help you get shots. Your job is to make shots. And you know, they got to get shots first. And UConn's going to be, you know, those players at Oregon State are going to have some really, really tough defenders on them at every position. And Ruth Hamlin can't guard both Stewie and Tuck. You know, she's going to have to, Scott's going to have to choose one of them for her to guard. And one of them's going to be open on the perimeter because Hamlin makes some attempts to come away from the basket, but she really is not going to get there. I mean, so either Tuck or Stewie are going to be open on the perimeter because of Hamlin's willingness to stay home all the time. But no, I do agree with you that it should be a good competitive basketball game for sure.
And that's exactly what happened, you know, for people that may not have stayed and didn't watch the game against Texas. That's what happened with Boyette. Was she wanted to stay close to the basket, and Stewart and Tuck floated outside, made open jump shots from outside, and you know that's how UConn eventually just wore everything down. So, all right, so we can go. We can't overlook Q. You know, Q won't let you overlook Q.
I wasn't gonna let you overlook.
So let's talk about Q's now. You know, they're playing the Boeheim zone, which drives me nuts in the men's game, and I just can't stand watching it. They do it so well, but I love to just see the man-to-man defense. I'm that type of person. And they can make shots and make shots, and Peterson is tremendous, and Butler is tremendous. And, you know, this is a team that is very, very difficult to play. And, you know, they may have 7 losses on the year, but I was looking, and they are all 7 top teams that they lost to.
And you know, the ability for them to make shots, you know, Butler is really shooting really, really well right now, and she's just been on fire in the last couple ball games. And Peterson has become a really, really special lead guard. I mean, just really, really special. Sykes and Butler were with the program back when they were in the old Big East, so don't forget those guys were freshmen. You know, this is we're only 3 years removed from what the old Big East was, so we got to see Sykes and Butler up close back then. So no, they're on a great and magical run. You know, the South Carolina win was huge. It was just a huge upset, and also don't forget the you know, at home that Albany. Is a good team. That was a really important win for them at home against Albany, and they did a good job against a very, very good. That to me was not an upset when Albany beat Florida. So I mean, that was a good win for them. And then you know, they destroyed Tennessee the other day. They just made Tennessee look very, very average after Tennessee had actually shown finally some consistency this season. You know, that consistency went right out the window when they played against Syracuse. You know, the zone. Yeah, you can get mad. I learned a long time ago, David, not to get mad at what coaches choose to play. You know, we're going to get mad because somebody plays a zone. The object of defense is to make the other team not make shots. So, you know, when Jimmy Boeheim puts a zone out there, you know, when you really analyze it, what is the difference between him circling the wagons with a 2-3 zone full of length and you know, Tony Bennett, you know, circling the wagons with a pack line man-to-man defense. You know, it's the same thing. They're both protecting the basket, and people have to try to still penetrate through it. It's very difficult to do, and they're making you shoot scud missiles over the top. But you know, that's just part of the game and strategy. I don't know that Q's actually the neighbor's matchup zone has probably got more length to it than the Syracuse zone. So, I mean, you're looking at 2 zone teams going head-to-head here, and, you know, it just seems like the Washington zone's a little bit more able to be stretched out a little bit further because of what O'Kahur, I think I'm saying her name right. God, I don't mean to disrespect the name there, but, you know, is making it a little bit tougher in the middle. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to watch 2 zone coaches go against each other. But Butler, you know, Butler's making shots from the parking lot. So it's, you know, when you're making shots from that far away, that's big time, especially at this time of the year.
There's no question. And Brittany Sykes, you mentioned, was Brittany Sykes, when she was a freshman and sophomore, was one of my favorite players in the country to watch. It's unfortunate. She still is a solid player, but she was pretty special before the ACL injuries. And you've certainly had enough in your program, that it's just awful to see how, the way that it can take away from some players and derail things.
Yeah, you hate to see. It's the only thing I hate about coaching is never seeing any player on any team hurt.
Well, you certainly got, just going totally out of left field here for a second, you got a little bit of good news today. I saw Keisha Hampton signed with the Minnesota Lynx.
That's awesome. Keisha's a really, really special player, and, she didn't play for us her senior year because she was injured. And, she was drafted, but we knew, Brian Hagler knew when he drafted her that it was going to be a couple of years, and she's had a really nice European run. She was with me working my summer camp with the little kids all last summer. And, Allie Quigley, got cut six times. I think it was something like six times, David, before she had the persistence to stick it out. And now is the WNBA player or sixth player of the year for two consecutive seasons. And, Keisha is very, very similar. They're different players, don't misunderstand, but Keisha and Allie both have the ability to score the basketball. And in the WNBA, I think they need as many scorers as they can find. And Keisha's a big, strong 6'2". She's got good length. She's got great fundamental skills to go along with her ability to score the ball, but that she does it in a fundamental way. So, she can play a big guard at the WNBA level. And I know Cheryl Reeves does a great job because Cheryl's with us with the USA team. And so I think it's a really, really good match. And I can see Keisha Hampton finding a role there where she can give Maya Moore. Maya Moore is also one of the great players of all time. And nobody said UConn was going to replace Maya, and then along came Stewie. So everybody says nobody's going to replace Stewie, and along comes who knows yet. But hopefully Keisha Hampton can give Maya Moore a couple minutes off the bench for Minnesota and give her, carve a niche and carve a role and expand that role and hopefully become another Allie Quigley story.
Well, let's get back to where we were. And now, so in your opinion, Syracuse, Washington, who do you think is your prediction to win this game?
I'm gonna take Washington in this one.
And is there anything in particular other than the fact that you think that they'll be able to handle the zone and the zone outside and the big presence on the inside?
I just think the Washington zone is just more mad. I just think it gets more ground covered, and I think Okahara in the middle is just a force. So I just think it's. I think it's going to go the Washington way. And then, if you're asking me on the other one, I do believe that UConn will win a hard-fought 20-point win against Oregon State. I don't think there's any way it's a blowout. And at the same time, people can say that 20 points is a blowout, but that's five trips each way, and that five trips each way, five trips defensively and five trips offensively, and now you got 10 baskets, and that's 20 points. And we lost a game the other night by 12, and this is basketball, and it can appear sometimes 20 seems like a blowout to fans and media, but it's really a lot closer than it can look.
Oh yeah, especially when you start making foul shots down the end. Yeah, no
right.
Question about that. So, all right, so you're calling for East Coast and West Coast Huskies.
Right, yes, I am. And then UConn's going to win it all. UConn's going to win their unprecedented 11th national championship, and I just...
It's pretty mind-boggling, isn't it?
Well, you said earlier in the show you don't want to get into the debate, but, this has really, really been good by me. I think it's been great for women's basketball that they have been able to create this kind of story. And I'm going to get off on another tangent here, but only 2% of media coverage in this country is of women's sports, 2%. It got up to 8%. I didn't come up with these numbers. Academics come up with these numbers. But you're talking 2%, Dave. We're not talking 22%. We're talking 2%. So, 2% of coverage of women's sports in America, and so now we're going to have somebody that doesn't really spend time on women's sports or give women's sports the time of day, say that this is bad for the sport. It's a nice excuse to use it as a reason not to watch. But you know what? The real root here of the issue is, where is more coverage of women's sports? I've heard male writers and male members of the electronic media criticize Geno and UConn's streaks like they're lesser than. Not even these men that say this don't even know that they're oozing sexism by their very utterances, and they don't even realize it. I mean, that's how sexist they are. I mean, that this is an easier feat to win 11 national championships when you're on, because it's only women. That is a sexist thought process. Championships are championships, you know, and it doesn't matter the gender of the athlete. So for UConn to win 11 national championships, very much is equal to and or greater than what Coach Wooden did. And I'll say this, nobody was a greater coach than Coach Wooden. He never left Westwood. All right. He never left Westwood till the pack back then, the Pack Eight season started. He'd take one trip a year to Chicago, and it maybe play Notre Dame every other year, but he'd play one game in Chicago Stadium. He'd play one game at Notre Dame every other year. Every other game played by UCLA was in Pauley Pavilion until they started the Pac-8 schedule. So, you know, there's a lot of differences that Geno's had to overcome. You go look at the schedule that UConn's competed against through the years. Believe me, you know, this is legitimate greatness. And when male sports writers and male members of the media can't identify it as equal greatness, that just shows where they're coming from. I mean, I defy any of them to say that Smokey Big House Gaines, one of the great coaches of basketball at Winston-Salem, I defy them to say that wasn't real championship winning. That would ooze of racism. So if you can sit here and say what UConn and Geno are doing is not equal to, that is just basically making a statement of you know, basically you're stating your own gender bias.
It you know, well, of course, but that's because UConn gets all of the great players, you know, that which is insulting to every other coach in the country and to the kids that decide to do things that aren't there, and you know, all of the other things that they say about the competition and all the other nonsense.
Well, again, I think you're being tongue in cheek there.
Yes, absolutely.
UConn works very hard. You know, don't forget, you know, that's the other thing about this. UConn's coaching staff, Chris Daly, Shea Ralph, Marissa Mosby, those guys, those are great coaches that work their butts off at making the great players that say yes to UConn better. I'm around them. I see them. I mean, it's not like they sit there and they just say, you know, we get great players, so that's all we have to do. They work really, really hard and diligently and teach the game. And so, you know, Stewie's better today than she was as a freshman because she's been very, very well taught. So is Morgan Talkin, and so is Mariah. They are so much better than they were as freshmen because they've been taught and coached so well. And the other factor is, you know, UConn's coaches also work at recruiting. You know, yeah, because they've been successful, Geno is able to say, yo, you want to win a national championship? Well, that's a pretty good recruiting pitch, okay? But they earned that. So, you know, but they also work very hard at recruiting. They spend more time than most people think really, really scrutinizing and evaluating and figuring out who are great fits for what they are trying to do.
That was one thing that really irritated me the other day. I'm on my way to Bridgeport, and I'm listening to local sports talk radio. And the guy says that Geno doesn't have to recruit, that he waits for them to call him. And this was the guy, the host of the show, in Connecticut. I'd say, really? I mean, it doesn't take much to see in, you know, anywhere where, you know, Geno's out at going out to this place and Chris is and Marissa and Shea as well. I mean, they work just as hard as every other coach, if not harder, because they're exclusive players. You know, they're looking at players that all of the top programs want. They're out there seeing them and being in front of them. Yes, they have the advantage of being able to say that they have the 11 championships should they win this. But it still means that you got to commit.
It's still 10. It's still 10 right now.
I did say if they win. So, but they do. They still have to go out and convince the person that this is the right program for them, and make sure the person is the right program for the person is the right player for the program too.
And the time it takes to evaluate properly the match, all the variables we're talking about that goes into being an athlete that we've discussed on this show earlier. You know, you still have to spend the time to evaluate that, and that takes time and it takes work. So. And it's just one of those situations where, yeah, we all wish that we could beat UConn tomorrow and become the next UConn. You know, but guess what? When you put yourself in that position and you have pounced on the position, I mean, that's everybody asks me about what one of the most important things that Gino and his staff did, and this is true about a lot of great programs. Is number one, they got to a Final Four before they were really probably good enough to get to a Final Four. And that's a tribute to their coaching staff, the players that were there at the time. And they got to that first Final Four. But then what they did next was the pouncing on the recruit. You know, that little window of opportunity slides open, and they just jumped on, pounced on, you know, the Rebecca Lobo recruiting. And, yeah, Gino will say he got a break and that nobody really realized that Jennifer Rosati was going to be as great as she is. But at the same time, you know, they used that first Final Four trip to New Orleans. You know, they used that and pounced on that and translated that into a national championship, their first national championship. And then, you know, they didn't have – don't forget, they were also coming from behind. There was already a juggernaut in place in Knoxville, Tennessee. It was already far, far ahead of them. It's not like they started in the same gate and came out of the gate, you know, when the bell rang. You know, they had to spot Tennessee, you know, half the trip around the racetrack when they started. So they came. This is a come from behind program. That have been here long enough to have watched it understand that this is a program that started from behind where Tennessee was, not even with where Tennessee was.
Well, Coach, you know, I think that you raised some excellent points, and I appreciate that. And, you know, I'm glad we did go into that. You know, there's plenty of other topics that we could delve into on this based on this season and the way things have gone. There's some great things and some not so great things, but it has been a fun season to watch. Underneath UConn, there has been more parity and more great talent spread out everywhere else than I can remember in recent memory. And it's great to see teams like you always scheduling up, playing everybody that you can, just the way that you go about doing your business. It's always a pleasure to watch DePaul, and it's great to have you as part of this business.
And it's great to watch Washington and Syracuse and Oregon State and the programs like that really just, you know, have put themselves. That's why this is a great year, and parity is becoming part of our sport, and that's why you have three new faces at the Final Four this year.
Well, Coach, thanks again, and good luck to you. Enjoy Indiana. Enjoy Indianapolis. Enjoy the Final Four environment, and it's always great to have you on board.
Thank you, David.